Welcome everyone to Miracles For Workshop, Assets and Defects. My name is Hillary and I'm an addict.
Hi Hillary.
If we could please open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference today.
Hi everyone, I'm Kelly, I'm an addict. I'm going to read Who is an Addict. Most of us do not have to think twice about this question, we know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same. Jails, institutions, and death. No more.
Good morning again. For those of you just walking in, my name is Hillary and I'm an addict. As we mentioned, the topic is assets and defects. And I know a little bit about that, as we all do. I'm not going to give you a whole lot of background because, let's be honest, at some point or another, you have all lived a part of my story and vice versa. So we're just going to jump right into the meat of things. You know, when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, I had a lot of reservations. But I also knew that I couldn't go on living the way that I had been. And I had the willingness to do whatever it took. And so when it came time to do the steps, I think it's really genius the way that they did this. Steps 1, 2, and 3, although they are our foundation, they're also the easiest ones, like, you know. And then so I felt like a lot of people do, that I got this, like, this is easy. All I have to do is admit that I fucked up and believe that I can do it and that my higher power is going to be by my side doing this, and then I can just turn it over. That's cool, right? And then they hit you with that fourth step that you really don't see coming because you're feeling pretty good about it, right? So the fourth step, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. That is where you almost lost me, Narcotics Anonymous. That is not something that I was prepared for. And then you've got 5, 6, 7, all kind of tie into 4 once you get the hang of that and you're willing to go to those dark places about yourself. So for those of you that have worked through the steps, you're going to relate a little bit to this. For those of you that haven't worked through it, I'm going to give you a little bit of insight about the fourth step and discovering those defects. Have you ever heard the saying, "Not my circus, not my monkeys"?
No.
Okay, it's a great saying, right? So when you get to your fourth step and you start working it, and all of a sudden you realize, you know, there's these things about you, right? Mm-hmm. Sorry. There's these things and you're having to discover them and everything. And as I'm working my fourth step, I start hearing this song in my head. And some of you may have heard it as well. It goes something like this. It goes, do, 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 do. Ladies and gentlemen, step right up. This is, in fact, your circus. And here are some rabid, feral monkeys for you to deal with. You know their names. You've seen them before. And I look over at my monkeys and I'm like, oh, look, there's dark humor and sarcasm. I kept those. But standing right next to me was my alpha monkey. And that was anger. Anger was my biggest defect coming into this program. It was more like the orangutan in the room. I was so comfortable with anger that I didn't even see it sitting right there. And so not only now do I have these monkeys, and they are definitely mine, I created them, but now I have to tame them. and stop them from being feral and biting other people and myself in the butt. Okay? So I've named this first monkey anger. And it's a big monkey. It is a very big monkey. I've spent years feeding it. And when I came to realize that the only way that I was going to deal with the anger part of it, at first I had to identify where it came from. And anger for me was a byproduct of guilt and shame. I was angry at myself first and foremost, but I was angry at so many other people because I didn't think that they had tried to do anything to stop me. And so now we have pride. Just following anger right up. And the more I tried to tame these monkeys, the more monkeys showed up and it got out of control and I couldn't do it. So a year later and 3 notebooks, I finally finished up my 4th step. It was a very painful process. And before I could admit to someone else, I had to think about, I think ahead. I did something they tell you not to do, and I looked ahead and I looked at that part where I had to ask my higher power to remove these defects of character. But I had spent so much time examining them, I still kind of liked some of them. Like, they were a part of me, and you want to take this big part of me and I'm going to ask my higher power to just take it away? Well, who am I going to be? What am I going to replace that with? So I took that anger and I found something that I was passionate about. For me, the root of anger is passion. And when I could remove the anger piece of it, I found things that I was passionate about. And one of those things was the fellowship and the program. I also found that the work I was doing at the time, I worked with adults with developmental disabilities. And I found that advocacy was a big passion for me. And that evolved into, I wasn't just being an advocate for people who didn't have a voice, but I took that into my recovery and I tried to be an advocate for the newcomer. I remember sitting in a meeting in Green Bay and there was this young woman who came in and she was terrified. You could tell right away this was her first rodeo. And she's terrified, and it was a pretty big meeting. Gosh, so many people. But I saw myself in her. She sat near the door with her knees facing the door, and she was just fidgeting. Her knees were bouncing, and she was doing the hand thing, and she wasn't making eye contact, and I knew she was ready to bolt. And every time that someone would stop, would say, that's all I've got, and would say, thanks, so-and-so. She would lean forward like she really wanted to share, and then someone else would say, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I'm like, okay. Now, one of my other character defects is I'm a little aggressive. I tend to let that get away from me sometimes, but I saw the opportunity to use that aggression and speak up, and I introduced myself. I said, I'm Hillary, I'm an addict, and they all, Hillary, and I said, and I would like to turn the floor over to this young lady. And she just cried. I'm like, what? I'm giving you this opportunity. Why are you crying? But she did. She had the opportunity to share that day. And I realized that the work that I put in on that anger had allowed me to use that as an asset, not just for myself. And believe me, that night, that was super therapeutic for me. I was... Another defect, there's a little pride there. Like, I felt like I had done something, like I had given back. And that's part of our program, is giving back. And till that night, I didn't know how I was going to do that. I just didn't know. And as the years go on and I get a little more serious about actually working the steps, I decide that I can't really remove those defects because they were such a big part of me. And that will come, but I can turn them into assets. So, another example of that is Manipulation. Like, some of you have experience with manipulation. I know I do. My boss now calls them persuasive skills. That might be a little far-fetched, but it has served a purpose when I don't use it in a way for personal gain. When I use it in a way to show that I am being open-minded and ask you guys to do the same. Like, although we share that commonality, we're all addicts, we're not always going to see eye to eye. So that manipulation for me, although it's not there, I still want to be able to find a loving and caring way to bring you my side of the story when I have the opportunity. And hopefully I can learn from yours. That's so important. I had a conversation with a young man last night, and he was just all over the place, I can follow. My train of thought is just, it makes wildly random stops and goes back and forth. So I was able to follow him really well, and I learned something. And I was like, okay, you know, I can do this. And that leads me to the last defect that I want to talk about. And this is not one that I had in the beginning. And I have heard that that's uncommon to not have this particular or recognize this particular defect in the beginning. And that was resentment. That guy showed up last year. I recently stepped away from really working a program for about 6 months. I had a very, I don't want to say traumatic, because it was of my own doing. Like, I let this type of thing happen to me. But when everything came to a head and I felt like everything had fallen apart, instead of turning to the program and really throwing myself back into it and surrounding myself with you guys, I stepped away. I isolated. And that was my lesson in resentment. But it wasn't resentment towards the situation or any person involved in it was resentment that I had allowed myself to go to a place that was so dark that I did not want to face you guys. I did not want to. I didn't use, but I definitely didn't work a program for a good 6 months. When I finally woke up one day and I said, okay, well, this is enough. This is probably the most uncomfortable of my defects, is the ability to carry this resentment and really want to act out on it, which would probably have led back to anger. When I finally got to that point, I pulled myself together. I did another fourth step specifically on the relationship that I left, and discovered that this resentment was not only towards my actions and allowing that, but the pieces of that part of my life that I had adopted and projected onto you guys when I did return. When I returned to the program, it was ugly. I had so many crappy things to say about the program abandoning me. I was the one that walked away. So I had to turn that resentment and humility. And that's where I'm standing today, right now in front of you, is a lot of humility. That's all I got. Thanks. Oh, lots of good stuff shared already. I'm Kelly, I'm an addict. Yeah, assets and defects. When Dan asked me to share about this, I was like, oh, yes, I defects, they're so heavy, you know. And when I first came into the program, you know, I didn't think I had a lot of good to give. You know, and like Hillary said, you know, working step 1, 2, and 3 really did lay the foundation for what I needed, 4, 5, 6, 7, and so forth. Like most of you, I was really angry when I came in. I was hurt. I was beaten. I was, you know,
I wanted something different, but I didn't know if I wanted to put the work in to do it. And that led me to a couple of white key tags, you know, and you know, it's part of my story. But when I did, you know, decide to put 2 feet into this program, you know, things started to change. 1, 2, and 3 were fundamental to 4. You know, I've worked this step a couple of times, and with my first sponsor, she talked about the assets and the defects. You know, she called them assets, liabilities. And she, you know, she said, you know, I want you to, you know, write down some assets, write down some things you want to change, some defects. And the assets were really hard at first. You know, and I said, I don't have assets, you know, like I just, you know, because it's that guilt and shame that we were talking about earlier. And she's like, yes, you do, you know. And for anyone, you know, who is new and doesn't think that they have assets, you're sitting in Narcotics Anonymous. It takes great courage to walk through these doors, you know, and to sit down and, you know, to want a different way to live. You know, courage, honesty, step one, you know, being open to a higher power, step two, you know, willingness, you know, to give it away. So when I looked at my assets, you know, I could write a couple down, but we did look at my defects and we went through those. And as we went through them, I realized those were truly things I didn't want to hold on to anymore. My defects prevent me from growing, you know, and they prevent me from focusing on the assets that I have. And when I focus all on my defects, I don't have any room for growth, and I can't give back to you what you guys have given to me, you know, and that's the opportunity to serve, to be here, you know, to chair a meeting when that still suffering addict walks in. So if I continue to hold on to these defects, I'm really doing myself a disservice and the fellowship a disservice. But like Hillary said, you know, those are very comfortable. Like misery was very comfortable when I first came into the program because that's where I lived. So to let go of those took some time. And, you know, it took my a very persistent sponsor to remind me to let them go, to give them away, you know, and I had to keep doing that. And as I did, you know, some of the good things started to come out and I could recognize them a little bit easier. You know, today I try to practice the opposite when I feel a defect coming up. You know, I can be very obsessive still. So when that starts to creep up, you know, I practice, you know, the opposite of that, which is letting go for me. You know, letting go, turning it over, letting my higher power do the good work inside versus, you know, Kelly's will, you know, which got me here. You know, and as I, you know, did the steps over, as I've progressed, you know, through recovery, you know, there are still defects. The defects come up, but now I can recognize them a little bit quicker and be rid of them, you know, and that's growth, you know, like I feel like that has helped me today, you know, and it has helped me, you know, share my story with my sponsees, you know, giving back what was freely given to us. You know, I always say recovery is like, is this gift, it's this beautiful gift. And what we do with it shows our gratitude. You know, how grateful am I today for the program, you know, that saved my life? Well, I'm grateful enough that I still work steps, I still go to meetings, I still have a sponsor, I have sponsees, you know, I give back. That is my way of also fending off these defects. Because when I focus on others and look at them, I can also see stuff in me that I need to work on, you know? And then when I recognize those things, I can get rid of them. It's all about getting rid of them or turning it into a positive, like Hillary had said. You know, and again, it goes back to being grateful. I'm extremely grateful to be here today. To have the opportunity to work on myself, you know, because we're all humans, we all have assets and defects, you know, and what we choose to do with those, again, is our gratitude. So I'm going to open this up. I'm going to let you guys share because I want to hear what you have to say as well. And we'll conclude this workshop then. So come on up.
Yeah. Ray, addict. Incredibly grateful to be here at Miracles with y'all. Very grateful to be a part of this fellowship. The only reason I just smashed way too much Denny's, so that's why I'm up here sitting down. It was not digestible, well, so I'm going to come up here and share my experience, strength, and hope on step six, assets and defects. So I'm going to start off in early recovery. You know, I surrounded myself with certain individuals because I wanted what they had, so I was willing to take their suggestions, right? One of the pillars of my support network told me straight out the gate that if you want your physical, mental, emotional fitness to all come together, you got to work on your spiritual fitness, right? Become spiritually fit. So like right away, I printed off a sheet of 100 spiritual principles that I knew I needed to practice, right, on a regular basis. So I began doing that. Began working my steps with my sponsor. As another addict shared, 1, 2, and 3, super easy, right? Love 1, 2, and 3. Work them on a regular basis anytime I'm struggling. 4 was very difficult, very painful, but relieving. 5, super emotional, but again, relieving. Getting through 4 and 5, I'm like, shit, the rest of these are going to be a breeze, right? I don't even think for a second what 6 truly entails. I'll tell you right now, 6 was the most difficult step for me to work, right? Full of defects, not wanting to look at none of them, you know. Thankfully, my sponsor, before I was allowed to start working step 6, he had me go around to 8 men in recovery in my community that weren't in the sober living house that I managed. Like, they needed to be men that didn't know me on a very intimate level, and asked them for 2 defects and 1 asset. That was very difficult, especially when every single one of them came at me with the same defect, at least one, which was ego. Definitely struggled with ego. That was hard. That's hard for me to grasp, right? It was hard for me to even look further into that at the other defects when, like, everybody's telling me I got to work on my ego. So, like, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do that. And this is instilling fear into me, right? Because, like, I don't know how to fix this. This is bringing me back to why I never got into recovery, right? Because I didn't know how to do it. Right, I was full of fear. That's what kept me away from this way of life. That kept me away from change of the unknown, fear of the unknown, right? So I went back to this pillar that, you know, in the beginning told me about, you know, spiritual principles, and I communicated to him my struggle with the 6th step, you know, why I was putting it off, didn't want to fuck with it. He said, Ray, you're already doing it, right? Like, you don't see it, but we see it. As you've been practicing these spiritual principles, you're persevering through these defects. You're already becoming a better individual, the man God intended you to be, right? By practicing these spiritual principles. For every character defect, a spiritual principle counters it. So as long as you can define which is which and focus on that, you're winning. You got it, right? So getting through 6, from that point, you know, it's just the pencil work, that therapeutic value of putting pen to paper, right? And man, it was so worth it. You know, it may have been difficult, but once I got through it, it was worth it. And I ain't saying I ain't perfect. I still battle with ego. For those of you who know me, know this. But now I know how to work through that. I know how to become a better me. You know, striving to be better today than I was yesterday by practicing these spiritual principles. Right, there's so many more spiritual principles than there are defects of character. So, like, there's multiple that can counter. Work on that shit. Like, that's how it worked for me. Truly grateful for all the steps, you know, because like once you get beyond 6, 7, 8, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, we already doing that, right? That's all, like, just doing what we're doing. There's now the therapeutic value again, a pen to paper. Super grateful for this program, super grateful to be a part of this amazing worldwide fellowship made up of all you beautiful people. Like, man, truly blessed, each and every one of us, no doubt. Thank you for the Miracles Committee. This is just amazing. My first Miracles, I didn't get to make it last year, so I was super excited to be able to come this year, and I just truly blessed. I thank you all for being a part of my recovery and allowing me to be a part of yours. Thank you.
My name's Melissa, and I'm an addict. So there are so many things that I could concentrate on, but I'm going to pick out just a few. So I grew up in a very critical family, and I'm going to cry, just a forewarning. So I grew up in a very critical family, and I remember one time, all my family abused me. And one time... that happened, and I walked out of the house. I was like walking away like a wounded animal. And I walked up to my dad, and I was all bloody. And he asked me what happened, and I told him, and he said, "You deserve every bad thing that ever happens to you." And that stuck with me through my entire life. Until recently, I have learned to nurture myself and be more kind. I often tell my clients, when I am thinking about how I speak to myself, I picture that child that I was and what I would want to say to that child. And that's how I speak to myself now, or how I try to speak to myself now. I have found more grace for myself and nurturing a nature. I mother myself and I father myself because I didn't have that growing up. And that's how I try to treat other people, and I'm not perfect. I acted out on a defect this morning at breakfast, actually, but I admitted it right away, and now I'm able to do that. So in taking care of myself and nurturing myself and being more kind to myself, I'm able to do that for other people. I'm able to do for myself and other people what my parents were never able to do for me. That's all I got.
What's up, family? I'm John Maddox. This is the reason I don't go to AA. Take my life in my own, got me in my recovery, show me how to live. I just worked on the 6 and 7 step, and the main two things that came out of it were procrastination and fantasy. I got to unfurl all the different things that I was also instilled with. My verbal abuse was silence. My the physical abuse was, I don't know what a hug is, except for my grandparents. And that, you know, that takes me back to 5 years old, and it's a fascinating realization to embrace the fact that not a single one of us have a comfortable life before coming in these rooms. And it's an even more important realization that I'm not alone in that. There's something that happens when I try and self-prescribe all of my solutions, and that is I'll just return into the basement. I'll just shut the door, ignore everybody. I'm constantly trying to attain the perfectionism that was instilled in me by my hyper-intelligent father, and also live up to the adulthood that my mom expected out of me when I was a kid, you know, like, you know, somehow be able to talk about geopolitical fucking maneuverings that are happening at any given time as we're just sitting down at some restaurant in the morning before I go off to, let's say, third grade for the sake of story. It's a true pleasure to take all of that bullshit, and this is way too grotesque and way too inside baseball, but if you've ever seen, I just saw this, if you ever seen the movie Mars Attacks, the U.S. is trying to figure out what the hell to do, this hyper angry general is just like, we gotta nuke these SOBs. And so eventually the movie goes, they finally launch one. They sent the Martians send out of this little tiny balloon thing, explode it, suck up the nuclear cloud, and then the head alien takes it and just inhales it and laughs. And it's this satisfying feeling to take all of my, I don't know, anxiety, anger, frustrations, all these things, and you know, the apple doesn't fall from the tree. I'm a hyper intelligent individual. I can think kaleidoscopically. I can get lost in the simplicity of life. Like I don't handle going with the flow. I don't know what that looks like. I'm trying. I'm here for fuck's sake. Like, that's a huge step forward. But overall, self-sufficiency is my number one go-to. Like, I'm in graduate school. I'm trying to be the best historian that's ever fucking come across this world, you know? And what that's producing is the same feeling I feel in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, where, I would do my damnedest to stay clean, but I would also just start doing the motions, and that led to a relapse in 2021. So being back in the rooms, coming back into these conventions, coming back into small semblances of service is a very, well, I just don't want to be here. Let's just put it that way. You know, it's the sponsor that I got. It's the sponsor who I'm able to talk about any type of abuse with, which then is kind of, you know, excuse the analogy, but it really is like pushing back the rock from where Jesus's tomb was and realizing that there's something else that you didn't think was going to be there. Something else is going on. And I can't explain it. All I know is that when I continually go to meetings, as I've been doing, especially in the past 2 months, there's just lightness. I'm at a fucking podium. I hate this shit. Like, my hands were sweating incessantly, and if I hadn't gotten into stand-up comedy, for fuck's sake, I wouldn't have steered right into that fucking Mars Attacks analogy. And just realizing the power of storytelling and is coming out as, I've got 7 fucking books. I'm not trying to, like, I'm fucking racking myself right now because I'm trying to write a thesis, and I'm just getting over what fantasy and procrastination are like in my life, and it's producing me to bring 7 books and trying to figure out what was going on in the Carter administration going into the fucking Reagan administration when it came to drug policy. And just because I know that, I immediately separate myself from everybody at this convention. Just because I fucking know, I'm trying to figure out how to do everything perfectly, and it's not going perfectly. And it's a great gift to be in these rooms. It's a great gift that it's a convention. It's just a good feeling. I don't know how to explain that feeling, but that's exactly where my spirituality kicks in, and I'm just left with gratitude. That's all I got. So I love you all from the bottom of my heart. I'll pass.
Hi, I'm Chris and I'm an addict. I just walked in here like 10 minutes ago and I'm like, I'm gonna go talk. that's kind of how I am. So I was thinking today, because I brought all my children with me here. I don't want to talk about that. But I have my daughter here and she's 12 and she's supporting me today. She wanted to be part of this. I used to be a crap mom, like really bad. I have a husband that at the time I did not deserve. While I was hiding away in my room or my bathroom or running off and spending hours with other people, not being there for dinner, not being there for bedtime, I was always gone, either physically or emotionally. And that, it's like I didn't have much experience with being a parent at that point. So, you know, I get clean. At first I'm doing it for my kids, because that's what I thought I needed to do. It didn't really work out because I was still that person who just wanted to hide all the time. But then I got some sense in me and I realized, you know, this is something I want to do because I want to be a parent. I want to be a wife. I want to have a life. And so when I was clean, and you know how those early days and first few months are just really tough. And so many challenges because you're facing life for the first time in God knows how long. And life for me included, you know, cleaning up after myself sometimes, showing up to things, having dinner as a family, being part of activities with the kids. And it was really, really hard because I was not used to it. I was not familiar with it, and I never used to do it. But the drive that I had when I decided I wanted to be better, I have just had to make myself comfortable being uncomfortable until I could be at that comfortable enough stage that I can handle it at least a little bit. I can't do it without my husband. I can't do it without my mom. I can't do it without the support, the moral support of my sponsor and all of my brothers and sisters in NA. They and my husband and parents, this huge ball of support that is so much larger than I ever realized. All this time I thought I was alone in trying to be a parent and failing, but I am not alone at all. And also, when I talk about the challenges, I talk to my husband, I talk to my sponsor and say, I am having a really hard time parenting. I feel like I'm losing my patience too easily. And they say, we all do. We all lose our patience sometimes. We all have rough times. And you're not alone. So not only learning how to be a parent, but also to accept myself as a human being, it's going. And I just hit 9 months, like last week. Thank you. And so I feel like I'm going strong. I'm in the right direction. I continue to work hard with being a mother and a wife, and I force myself to be where they are. If they're downstairs, I force myself to be downstairs, unless I have to go to the bathroom and take a shower or do makeup or whatever. It's just that, making myself comfortable with being uncomfortable. With that, I pass.
Hi, family. My name is Nick. Coming at it. Thank you for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. The two of you, I appreciate it. You know, I just got up here at 8 o'clock, and it's funny that I just finished my fifth step, and it took me about a year to do 4 and 5, and I work with my sponsor every Monday morning, and I do about 4 or 5 questions. That's it, every week, and I keep it that simple. But yesterday morning, I go to a meeting every Monday through Friday at 8 o'clock, and someone brought up something and shame and guilt. And it hit me so hard that I thought about coming here. And as the day progressed, I'm sitting with a friend last night at dinner, and I said to her that I think I'm going to drive in the morning. I'm going to go home and get some rest, get some sleep. And I came up here, and I'm grateful I came up here, because my guilt and shame, a lot of it through my whole life, but most of it was not being there for my daughter for over 25 years. And having the relationship when I moved to Milwaukee from New York, and having the relationship that I have with her today took 5 years. And there is no more guilt and shame behind that. And I don't have any guilt and shame anymore, because I'm open and honest. And that's the key, self-honesty for me. Once I got honest with myself completely, I have nothing to hide anymore. I'm not shameful of anything I've done in my life. And there are some really horrible things. You know, so, you know, being in this program, I've had a couple of relapses, but it was like 9 years I relapsed, 16 years I relapsed. And now that the strong program I have today, I have a little over 5.5 years. And I'm so grateful that I was able to go back and do those steps. And then someone was sharing, the first person that shared up there, and he was talking about how he was frightened to do the sixth step. Well, come Monday morning, I'm supposed to be prepared with a few of my questions on the first step. So I'm just grateful to be here, and thanks for letting me share.
My name's Kaylin, I'm an addict, and I guess I just wanted to share on my fear of rejection, because that's a huge one for me, and it still is today. In my active addiction, my fear of rejection led me to befriend anyone and everybody with whatever I had, whether that be material possessions, with my body, you know, just very superficial relationships were formed in active addiction with what I had to offer. I just wanted you to be friends with me. I wanted you to hang out with me. So what could I give you in return? And when I got clean, I think more than anybody else, I rejected myself. And I used to always say, like, I would reject me before you can reject me, because that way my feelings aren't hurt. So I'll just put up these walls. And I won't let anybody in, because if nobody can get in, then I'm never going to get my feelings hurt. I'm never going to feel rejected if I don't give people the opportunity to get to know me. If I don't become vulnerable and allow people into my life, then I'm not going to get hurt. Vulnerability really started with me and my sponsor, and I'm super grateful for her. I was able to be vulnerable for the first time in my life with my sponsor and not be rejected. With some of the deepest, darkest secrets I've been holding on to from childhood, the stuff that I thought I would take to the grave and never tell another soul, the stuff that anytime I think about it, it would immediately, I would feel like I was drowning. Anytime I would think about these things, I would be drowning in my own, and just suppress, stuff. We don't talk about that, we don't think about that. And over the years, even in my active addiction, like, those thoughts weren't as daunting as they were when they were fresh, and like early adolescence. Those feelings weren't as daunting because I knew how to throw drugs on them. So it wasn't an issue. It's just all my feelings, I was able to suppress them and numb them with drugs. So I get clean and I reject myself. And I guess that's like, it could be used as an asset, right? That fear of rejection and my active addiction, it allowed me to bring people into my life because I just wanted attention. I wanted to people please. I wanted people, no matter who, what, where, when, why. And in my active addiction, like I said, I built those walls, but those walls were kind of necessary for me early in recovery, because if I would have came in here acting and behaving how I was when I was in my active addiction, I would have been that painful addict sharing about relationships that are just toxic as fuck still, and that wasn't my story when I got into recovery, so I'm really grateful for that. So that was an asset. That fear of rejection was an asset for me. It protected me in early recovery. But now that fear of rejection no longer serves me, I don't reject myself. I don't think others reject me. People love me. I can take a compliment today. I think people love me. So yeah, that's my stuff. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Nicole and I'm an addict.
Hi, Nicole.
One of my defects is I have very bad negative self-talk. And so I didn't want to come up here because I'm like, I have nothing worth sharing. I'm also a crier if you're not from my area, so I need y'all to deal with it. My negative self-talk I've had for as long as I can remember, even before substances ran my life. I was buying a house with my ex-husband. It was our first house. We found this beautiful place. It was within our budget. And my ex-husband's like, do you want to put an offer in? And I said, no. He's like, why? And I said, I don't deserve nice things. When you were sharing about anger being a big defect, I too am very rage motivated. And you were talking about service. And I'm like, oh, I would love to be of service again. When I was in the thick of recovery and I was chairing a meeting and I was a part of area, like, I felt really involved and connected with the community. My first thought was, I am such a deeply flawed person, I don't deserve to be of service. And I was thinking about why. And I'm also very inconsistent. I come in and out of the rooms. I'll be apart for a while and then I'll just sort of dip out again. And then I was thinking about that. And if I want to be of service and if I want to continue to grow, I have to do the work. I have to keep showing up. I have to show that I'm inconsistent, but I don't have to be. And I just have to keep showing up. I have to keep speaking up when I really don't want to. And as much as I don't want to put in the work, and as much as I don't want to think I have this very glaring defect that keeps me out of the rooms, the only way I can do it is by saying, hi, I'm an addict and this is my defect. So thank you for the sort of, I guess, spiritual enlightenment. I called it a mind fuck in my head when that happened and I started bawling. But yeah, so thank you, that's all I got.
Hey guys, I'm Deb, I'm an alcoholic. So I'm a noob. First convention, not even anywhere close to completing the first step. And listening to you guys talk about defects scares the shit out of me. Cause damn. There's a saying that I always use, it's fucked up like a football bat. Think about that for a few seconds, it's kind of screwed up. And so I'm trying not to look ahead because I'm not past step one, two, or three yet, but rattling around in the back of my head are those defects that I know I'm gonna have to deal with. Rejection being a big one. Resentment being tied to that one. and then subsequently anger. A lot of which is stemming from childhood bullshit. But listening to you guys in your various stages of recovery, hearing the process, hearing how you face those, dealt with them, found peace and balance, turning your defects into assets, letting go of your defects, is something that I'm going to keep in the back of my mind that's going to rattle around with the defects that I have to deal with that I'm not looking forward to dealing with. But at the same token, it's another piece of this unity that I can reflect on from this convention and hopefully other ones going forward. So when I do get to step four, I can think back and go, remember the stories at the convention. Remember the people who had already gone through step four, were on to step five, on to step six, seven. You can do it too. And it's going to be painful and it's going to suck. And I know that. I don't know to what degree, but listening to you guys helps give encouragement and inspiration for me to go ahead and push forward once I get to that step. So thank you all for welcoming me and sharing your stories so that I have that in my arsenal of tools to get through it when I get there. So with that, I'll pass.
I'm Beth, I'm an addict. I just realized, I've been ruminating over there about how my defect is the thing that was keeping me from getting my butt up here. So, okay, here I am. And the point I just want to make is that, you know, when I came into the rooms and, you know, it took a few months for me to even just, like, my mind to clear and stuff so I could even start to think about working the steps. But I remember once I got to that point where I was like, okay, I'm going to work my steps, blah, blah, blah. Then I was in gung-ho, let's do this, I want to do it over. You know, I was ready to, like, I started out, like, working them all, you know, thinking I could work them all in, like, a month. And but I kept hearing people talk about how scary the fourth step was. Oh, my God, it's horrible, it's scary, it's horrible, it's scary, it's horrible. And then I was at a convention like this. I don't remember which one because I've been to a lot of them. But somebody got up and talked about how, for them, the fourth step was this revelation. It was this lightening of the load. It was a time when they just, like, the light bulbs went on and it became clear what had been driving them all their lives. And, you know, and as our book says, you know, active addiction takes us to a place where we become somebody we don't want to be. And that was me. I didn't know anything else. I didn't understand how the program worked, and I needed to understand. I really wanted to know how this worked, but I didn't. I couldn't figure it out. But I knew, above all else, I had turned into somebody I didn't want to be. So I got to the point where I was ready to do whatever they told me to do, and that included working the steps. And I decided to listen to that person and think, okay, well, this can be an opportunity for growth, and I'm just going to do it. And what's the worst that can happen? It's never going to be as bad as it used to be. Nothing. And as you hear many, many, many addicts say, their worst day in recovery was better than their best day out there. So after working the steps one, two, and three, I had come to trust in my higher power. And I had a sponsor who is still my sponsor today, and I love her so much, and I knew I could trust her. So with that trust, I went just face first into step four and five and six. And it really, it turns out, or it turned out, it's the first time I did the steps. I have done them all the way through. I'm kind of working on my second time through now. But it turned out for me, working the fourth step, that I found that my biggest fear was my basic shortcoming. That fear is based in my fear of not being good enough. That's why I sat over there through at least five people going, I should get up there. No, I won't be good enough. No, I should get up. No, Jesus. So finally, I still have that shortcoming, clearly, but I've learned how to identify it and to choose. So today I choose to trust my higher power, trust the folks in this program, trust the process of this program, and decide that that's not the person I want to be. The person I want to be is somebody who doesn't succumb to that fear, who trusts their higher power, who trusts this process. I have gained, you know, they tell you when you first come in, you know, stay till the miracle happens, that your wildest dreams will come true. And I'm standing before you going, yeah, it works. It really, really works. If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, it works. You don't have to understand how. You can figure it out over time. I'm a big psychology person. I love, and so I've done lots and lots of research into how this all works. And there's ton, if anybody cares, there's tons of scientific evidence to why the 12-step programs work for humans, but you don't need to know that. You just need to do it, trust the process. When all these people stand up and go, it's worked for me, there's a reason they're doing that, and it's a reason why it's worked for millions of people. So don't be afraid if you haven't done it. It's the best thing. It's the best thing. It may be scary, but trust the process. It really is the best thing you can do for yourself and for all those people around you. So that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Love you.
Hi, my name's Denise, and I am an addict.
Denise.
So oddly enough, I too had the conversation in my head of, I'm not good enough to get up there. And yet, as long as I've been in this program, it's never done me wrong. But yet I still feel inadequate to come up here and share. I wanted to touch a little base on resentment and anger and fear. So I was adopted by my family when I was 18 months old. So I kind of have like this, the fear of abandonment and fear of rejection from an early age. And at a very, like, maybe even like three, I grew to hate my mother that adopted me. Because I can remember being very young, and at one point I remember before every meal I would say, I love you, Mom, and then one day it just stopped, and I don't know why. So I grew up with this hatred, like, I'm talking 3 years old, hating my mother, and being scared to death of her at the same time. I went through a treatment program in 2007, and every day you worked on your first step. That was one of the big things that you did for 28 days, you worked on your first step. But they also did this thing called a peer evaluation, which reminded me of something another addict said, where everybody in your group would point out three character defects and then one asset, and then you had to do the same for everybody in your group. And for me, mine were humor, guilt and shame, and anger. And I still have this wicked sense of humor that I don't know that'll ever go away, but. So then they also do this thing in treatment where you have a family day where your family comes in and they had written you a letter about how your addiction had affected them. Which is a great, great idea. For some reason, well, my counselor at the time was on vacation, so I had a fill-in counselor. And for some reason, well, so my mom came in. I was 34 years old. And for some reason, this counselor that was filling in decided to let me talked to my mom about how she had affected me versus how my addiction had affected her. So I had like 30 some years of anger and resentment just built up, and it gave me so many excuses to use when I was using. Just thinking about my mom would be like, oh, I gotta get high over that, you know. So this family session just turned out to be me just letting go of all this anger I had towards my mom. It was just this big sob fest, and I didn't do that, I would never do that, I don't remember doing that, so I never really got any closure. That was her way of dealing with it. But I felt really good just finally being able to let up, because I used to have dreams about beating the shit out of my mom, because she used to beat the shit out of me. And I was always so intimidated of her that, I mean, I never would dream of standing up to her, but in my dreams, I would kick the shit out of her. So we had this family session, and I was finally able to, like, just pour out all this anger that I had. And when I did my fifth, sixth, and seventh step, my sponsor, like, it was so weird, because once I finally wrapped my head around the fact that all that anger that I had towards her did nothing to her. It's that old, you know, we drink the poison expecting the other person to die, and we are sick, we get sick from it. That's how I had been living for so long. And once I wrapped my head around that fact that it was just keeping me sick, and I was able to let it all go, it was such a turning point in my life that I was so relieved to be able to realize that I didn't have to keep that anger inside myself anymore. Years later, I was doing my ninth step, and I really had to stop and process how I was going to do my ninth step with my mom, because I still had, it was like one of those things where you let the resentment go, and then I'd think about her and it would come back, and then so I had to really be careful about doing my ninth step with my mom, because I couldn't go in going, this is her opportunity to tell me she's sorry. This was, you know, my opportunity to forgive myself and get her forgiveness. So I was like 6 years clean before I could ever sit down with my mom and do the ninth step. And I was able to do it successfully. In the back of my mind, of course, I thought, you know, this is her perfect opportunity to say she's sorry, but she didn't, and I may never get that, and I have to accept that. So I'm grateful to be here today. I'm grateful I got my ass up here to share. Grateful for everybody else that's in here and shared. I appreciate it. Thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Hi, I'm Melissa. I'm an addict. Oh my God, my heart is racing. So I'm coming up here because I really just want to be able to say I had the courage to do it. For me, I was in AA for the last 3.5 years until I relapsed, and I didn't relapse in alcohol, and that's what I learned. Like, I really am a full-blown addict, and it doesn't even have to be an illegal substance, and it was over-the-counter. It's just that I have such an addictive personality, and I feel like Narcotics Anonymous is where I belong. This is my first convention, too, and thank you. And today, actually, is my one-month anniversary. I'm shaking like a leaf, but you know, I keep hearing all about all these defects, and I can think of a million of mine. My most recent one, I mean, I went through the steps once, I'm going through them again. I'm on step two with my sponsor, but the first time I went through, my biggest things were like low self-esteem, and fear, of course. And I say that as I'm shaking here, but I'm like, wow, look at me, I got up here, I'm doing it, and I want to think of an asset as courage. So that was enough to get me up here. And if you are sitting down there and you're afraid to come up, just come do it, because this feels great. So thank you all for your shares, and I'm so grateful to be here. I'll pass.
Hi, my name is Dana. I'm an addict. Thanks to the last person who shared, because most of the time I go to AA meetings and I'm in other fellowships where I have to admit that I'm an addict, just not the over-the-counter or illegal stuff as well, but I have the disease of more. And this year my goal is really to see how the disease manifests itself as the ism in all my affairs, whether it's financial, sex, exercise, sugar, things that aren't illegal, you know, and all of the character defects. It's like, I mean, we went to the complacency meeting yesterday, and I've been in the rooms for some time, and I'm like, I got this, I'm of service. But then the defects of character are like, I'm a major people pleaser, which leads to not overextending myself, overcommitting, overpromising, and underdelivering. Major procrastinator. Like, I'm such a procrastinator that my friend's like, what's it like to feel early to this meeting? Like, is it really? Like, all the time, 24/7? And then, like, it's me that makes me screw up. Like, I am the problem. And then I get resentments because, what, I was late. I was late in perfectionism. Like, I'm not going to do this job. Or, like, it's so big and daunting that I might not be able to do it. And, like, at my career, there's, you know, I work in technology, so, like, it's always changing, right? And there's always new stuff. And I'm supposed to be the master of the thing at the corporation, the new thing, you know, but it's always changing. Literally, Google just pushes new updates every couple of weeks, so you better be on it, right? How can you be a master of anything that's brand new? Nobody is. It's the progress. It's every single day showing up. And, like, this is the coolest place. We're so lucky that we got here. Like, jails, institutions, or death, you know? We're so lucky. And it's not about perfection. It is, it's truly just progress, stepping forward every day and like, knowing that beautiful imperfection is what we got, you know? Imperfection is beautiful, and snowflakes, come on. Look at that. We're just, we want to get better, and we are doing it just by showing up. So I'm not going to talk anymore because I love to talk, but I'll talk to you outside. Thank you.
Anyone else? Last call. Should we go ahead and wrap this up? Okay. Again, I'm still Hillary, and I'm still an addict. Which one you guys want to do? We do recover or just for today? Just for today. All right. Well, why don't you come on up and do that then?
I'll just get out of your way.
All right. Hi, I'm Beth, still an addict. Just for today. Okay, never mind. I can't do it. Well, no. Just for today. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. And just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow this way, I have nothing to fear. Thank you.